November 5th is Election Day. November 5th is Election Day. Are you registered to vote? Have you cast your ballot already? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WBXU. I'm Lucy May. We're live from WCET's studio today with a student audience and a panel of guests to discuss the presidential race, which issues the candidates are talking about on the campaign trail, and what's important to you, the voters. We want to hear from our student audience, but we're going to get to that in just a moment. First, I'm joined today by WBXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Good as always to have you with us, Howard.
Good to be here.
League of Women Voters of Ohio Executive Director Jen Miller. Thanks for being here, Jen.
Thanks so much.
Kenton County Republican Party Chair Shane Nome. Great to have you here, Chair Nome.
Excited to be here.
And Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Gwen McFarland. Great to have you back on the show, Chair McFarland.
It's great to be here.
We've got guests in our audience from a number of schools, including Cincinnati School for the Creative and Performing Arts, Aiken New Tech High School, Northern Kentucky University, UC, and Cincinnati State. We're thrilled to have you here, and we want to kick things off with a question.
What's up, Cincinnati? Corbin Bone here with FC Cincinnati. Voting super important to me, especially this year. Is it important to you? Why? Why not? Let's talk about it.
Okay, so if you're old enough to vote, are you going to? Why or why not? If you want to answer our question, flag down our colleague and we'll get a microphone in front of you. Jen, what are we seeing this election cycle when it comes to young voters? Are more young people registering to vote?
Yeah, so Ohio, unfortunately, still lags behind some of our neighboring states in youth turnout. And that is unfortunate because this is your Ohio more than it's mine. Because you are going to outlive me, I hope. So, but we are seeing more excitement. We are seeing some record numbers in registering to vote, and my hope is that that's the first step, and then you got to turn around and cast that ballot.
Yeah, Howard, how important are young voters going to be in this election?
Well, I think it's going to be enormously important. Numbers I've seen that say that since the Democratic Party changed their presidential candidate from Joe Biden to Kamala Harris, there have been something like 12 million 18 to 24-year-olds across the country who've registered to vote. And you have to assume that they did that because they intend to vote, or at least the vast majority of them will.
Do we have any audience responses to our question? Who's anybody planning to vote? Okay. I see a person who's going to tell us.
My name is Musa.
Okay. Why are you planning to vote?
I'm planning to vote so I could be a part of history, make it history. I want to vote.
Oh no, you're doing great. Get real close to the microphone.
And also, like, want to vote on many issues that I see I have a problem with, like locally and federally. And I'm excited about the candidate, like the Democratic candidate, and I want to be a part of history, making her the president.
Well, thank you so much for that answer. Anybody else want to weigh in if you're planning to vote? Anybody else? Okay. Well, we'll keep moving. Maybe you'll warm up. You'll want to answer some of the other questions a little bit later. When it comes to the issues that matter most to voters this election, most polls say the economy is top of mind.
Donald Trump has no plan for you. And when you look at his economic plan, it's all about tax breaks for the richest people. I am offering what I describe as an opportunity economy, and the best economists in our country, if not the world, have reviewed our relative plans for the future of America. What Goldman Sachs has said is that Donald Trump's plan would make the economy worse, mine would strengthen the economy. What the Wharton School has said is Donald Trump's plan would actually explode the deficit. 16 Nobel laureates have described his economic plan as something that would increase inflation and by the middle of next year would invite a recession. You just have to look at where we are and where we stand on the issues. And I'd invite you to know that Donald Trump actually has no plan for you because he is more interested in defending himself than he is in looking out for you.
It's just a soundbite. I gave her that to say. Look, I went to the Wharton School of Finance, and many of those professors, the top professors, think my plan is a brilliant plan. It's a great plan. It's a plan that's going to bring up our worth, our value as a country. It's going to make people want to be able to go and work and create jobs and create a lot of good, solid money for our country. And just to finish off, she doesn't have a plan. She copied Biden's plan, and it's like four sentences, like run, spot, run. Four sentences that are just, oh, we'll try and lower taxes. She doesn't have a plan. Take a look at her plan. She doesn't have a plan.
That was a clip from the ABC News debate. Chair Noem, what are the key points in former President Trump's economic plan that you think would be most helpful to average Americans?
Well, Lucy, I think the Ronald Reagan's notion, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago, is really important to focus on here. You know, in the last 4 years, we've seen inflation go through the roof. This spending is out of control coming out of Washington and out of the executive branch. President Trump's really got a policy and a plan to get back to what he did 8 years ago. And new proposals are going to be no taxes on tips. These are real policies and real economic agendas that are going to help the working class and the hospitality class in this country.
I want to hear from you, Chair McFarland. What are the points in Vice President Harris's economic plan that you think are going to have the most impact for average, everyday people?
Majorly, her plans focus on we the people. And when you talk about we the people, it's what those issues that are important to we the people, such as not raising taxes on the middle class or the working people, being available and accessible, being united, not dividing on issues. Issues related to the middle class family, like I'm going to school, how am I going to get my kid to school, how many buses do we have to catch, what about daycare, what about housing for individuals who cannot afford high rent prices, mainly the issues that faced your parents, my parents, all of you in this room. How to get to school, how to find a job, how to go to college. College may not be for everyone, but if you're going to college, there's been tuition breaks that that are available now to help individuals, you know, so that they can successfully complete high school and college as well. Not high school for tuition breaks, but in college. So just helping working with the working families, that's the most important thing, as well as being united for we the people and not divided as we the people.
I want to ask our audience, you know, we hear about rising prices at the grocery store, at the gas pump, and college tuition. How are prices affecting you? If you have a thought about how prices are affecting you as a student or your family, flag down our colleague and let her know if you want to answer. Let's hear more from the presidential candidates.
Did you know that the Kamala Harris price hikes have cost the average family $28,000, that credit card debt is at an all-time high, and that basically the prices of things have never been like this ever before? There's never been anything like it. If you want to bring the prices down, if you want to have a good life, vote for Trump.
Almost one in four Gen Z and millennials say they don't want to have kids because it's too damn expensive. Mm. How are you going to help young people not feel left behind?
First of all, it's a very real issue and we need to take it seriously. And I do take it very seriously. So there are a number of issues that contribute to that feeling. One is housing is too expensive and we need to increase the housing supply. So part of my plan is to work with home builders in the private sector to build, by the end of my first term, 3 million more housing units. Second piece is $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. Because a big issue in terms of the barrier to being a homeowner is just having enough to actually put that down payment down, right, to get your foot in the door. The other piece of it is we need to give tax credits and really understand that middle class and working people need a break. And so part of my plan is to give 100 million more people who basically are middle class working people tax cuts, including for young parents, a $6,000 tax cut for the first year of their child's life, which helps them buy a crib or a car seat or clothing and just get through that first year, which is such an important and critical stage of their child's development.
We have a student volunteer who is ready to answer our question. How are price increases affecting you? Tell us who you are.
My name is Ari. I think that the prices, due to the prices increasing, I feel like it's affect especially teenagers, especially single parents. My mom's a single mother, and I have two younger siblings, and I'm also off to college. So that's just money on top of money, including with inflation and her having children. So yeah.
Yeah, very important point. If anybody else wants to chime in on that, please let us know. Howard, we just heard from both the candidates. How do they differ in their messaging about rising prices and how they plan to address the problem?
Very differently. In Harris's case, I mean, she does have a plan. The question about her plan is, and it's not just four lines, no matter what the other side's telling you. The question about her plan is whether or not what's going to happen in the congressional races. Are the Democrats going to control the Senate again? Or are they going to win back the House, which they have not had for some time? I mean, she's going to need help to do this kind of wide-ranging plan that she has. In Trump's case, it seems to me to be basically centered around tariffs and putting tariffs on every kind of product, which Harris says would add about $4,000 to every family's expenses over each year. So there's obviously problems with that as well. I mean, it's not a fully detailed plan.
Yeah, and I think there's been analysis of both plans saying, you know, both plans need more detail to kind of figure out exactly, you know, what would come of them. Did we have another student who wanted to answer, Jen?
Hi, my name is Luna, and for me, my parents, they have money, but they don't have enough for like things that would make things. We have the necessities, and that's like about it. So it just feels like with the housing going up, the housing payments, especially gas prices, that's a big one. It's hard to get around without the bus, and if I don't have bus fare, then I just have to stay home. Things like that really affect my daily life.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Luna. And I should mention that those last clips that we saw, the first one came from former President Trump's TikTok account. The second one came from an interview on Call Her Daddy. Chair Noem, I want to talk to you about former President Trump's plan. And a recent Gallup poll found that 54% of voters view the former president as better able to handle the economy than Vice President Harris. Why do you think that is?
Well, you look at his career and his track record in business. He's got the nuts and bolts of financial experience that we want in a chief executive running our country in these complicated financial decisions on a macro level. You know, when we're talking about onshoring businesses, he's been in the boardroom. He's been in the hard negotiator to cut the deal that's best for the business. That's the same kind of deal making that we want to have on a national and international level.
Chair McFarland, I want to get your thoughts. What do you think about what this polling shows? How can Vice President Harris convince more voters that she could handle the economy?
She has already convinced individuals that she can handle that problem. She has served as the Vice President of the United States for the past four years. She has came with a vast amount of experience in how to work with we the people, how to listen. That's one thing that she has over her opponent is he does not listen, and he prefers to bully people rather than to talk to people and try to unite them and bring them together. She also is sensitive in, regarding issues around medication costs. So basically what she's involved in and has done, and we see that from other candidates who are Democrats, looking at how we can reduce the health care cost as well as medication. So individuals, for example, here who have been on insulin or across the United States, insulin costs a lot of money, but working with the pharmaceutical companies to bring that cost down has been a phenomenal opportunity for those who may have family members that are diabetics or have any other medical care which they require a lot of medication. And so she's got the expertise in that area. She has a strong background and also in money and financing, and she just listens to the people, and then she meets the people where they are to try to help them have a better life. And when you look at her plan and what she said, and when you look at his plan, one of the issues on his Project 2025 is to add higher taxes for the working class people. So if you're going to pay more taxes and you're a working class person, and I'm a female single head of my household, and I have two or three children, that's going to make it very, very challenging and difficult for me. So those are some of the basic fundamental expertise, levels of expertise that she brings. Plus, she is qualified and competent to run for the presidency of the United States.
You mentioned Project 2025. I just want to throw out there, if our audience is familiar, this was a plan that was crafted by the Heritage Foundation for an administration to follow, but President Trump has said it's not his plan. Former President Trump has said that.
Even though he signed off on it. He has signed off on it.
He's disavowed it.
So, Jen, I want to ask you, we talked about how the economy is a huge issue for so many voters. What do we know about how many voters base their choice on a single issue?
So I actually don't know how to answer that. But I'm going to go ahead and just respond, I think, to something that y'all can consider. Okay? So sometimes when we go to the voting booth, we don't actually understand what someone's job is. Okay? So one of the things that the president does is the president can propose legislation. The president also appoints heads of agencies. Those agencies do things like see how we, oversee our health care policies, oversee the Department of Energy. So energy is incredibly expensive. Which president do you think would handle energy issues better? Immigration. Immigration is actually a really fascinating one because it has a lot of economic impact. A lot would argue that our immigration system is keeping our food prices down, while others would say immigration makes it harder for some to get jobs. So as you're thinking about the presidential candidate, what I want you to think about is what matters most to me and what's their job, and who. We're never going to have perfect presidential candidates, because guess what? They're people just like you and me. But part of their job is not just to propose legislation or veto legislation that they don't like. They oversee all of these agencies that then impact our daily lives, from are we investing in transit? Are we investing in highways? Are we investing in a little bit of both? Are we subsidizing coal or are we subsidizing wind and solar, right? These are the kinds of things that you should be thinking about. And when they talk about the plans, that's what you should be thinking about. But Howard made a really important point, and I'll close here in a second, which is that then who's in Congress and who's in the U.S. Senate matters so much, because the president, by him or herself, cannot pass a federal budget, right? It takes the legislature, too. And so this is where, when you're thinking about who you're going to vote for in the ballot box, think about who you trust to make those kinds of decisions.
We do have a couple trivia questions today, and these are only for students in our audience to try to answer. Here's the first question. Howard, will you read it for us?
Sure, Lucy. This is a something that happened in 1987, which I'm sure this audience remembers well. What is the name of Donald Trump's first book that was published in that year?
The name of Donald Trump's first book published in 1987. You'll have a little time to think about it. We're going to get your answers right after our break. And up next, we'll discuss how the candidates are addressing abortion in the race. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're live from WCET with a student audience for a full hour on the presidential race and what young voters are concerned about this election. My guests are WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, League of Women Voters of Ohio executive director Jen Miller, Kenton County Republican Party Chair Shane Noem, and Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Gwen McFarlane. We're going to hear the candidates' messaging on abortion in just a moment.
But first, we threw out this trivia question before the break. Can you repeat the question for us, Howard?
I can. What is the name of Donald Trump's first book published in 1987?
Anybody have a guess?
Nicholas Wells, The Art of the Deal.
Oh, dang, right out of the gate. Well done, Nicholas. Good job. You're going to have one of our fabulous prizes. Thank you so much.
There you go, man.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. So let's hear from the candidates on something else. While the economy is top of mind, a Kaiser Family Foundation poll shows abortion has passed inflation to become the top issue for women younger than 30. We're going to hear from the candidates.
You will be protected, and I will be your protector. Women. Women will be happy, healthy, confident, and free. You will no longer be thinking about abortion. It's all they talk about, abortion, because we've done something that nobody else could have done. It is now where it always had to be, with the states and a vote of the people.
At a rally in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. former President Trump recently told women, "You will be protected, and I will be your protector." What do you make of that?
So he who, when he was president, hand-selected three members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade. And they did just as he intended, and there are now 20 states with Trump abortion bans, including bans that make no exception for rape or incest, which we just discussed, which means that you're telling a survivor of a crime of a violation to their body they don't have a right to make a decision about what happens to their body next, which is immoral. So this is the same guy that is now saying that. This is the same guy who said that women should be punished for having abortions. This is the same guy who uses the kind of language he does to describe women. So, yeah, there you go.
Just heard from the candidates. Those clips were from Sinclair Broadcasting for the first clip and Call Her Daddy for the second one. I want to ask the student audience now, how important is abortion in this election to you? Flag down our colleague with your thoughts if you've got, and it looks like we've got lots of people with thoughts on that. We'll let our colleague get to you. Chair McFarland, I want to ask you this question. According to Brookings, we won't see a national abortion ban or a federal law codifying Roe v. Wade, regardless of who wins the presidential election, because of the probable makeup of the U.S. Congress. We've talked about how the president has to have the support of Congress to pass these laws. How much is still at stake for voters and in the minds of voters when it comes to abortion in this presidential election?
First of all, a woman has a right to make the decision about her body, her ability to access birth control if she wants to. His goal, he's refusing and to allow women to have access to birth control. If a woman has been raped, he has made comments like it's her problem. It's important that women have the right as well, working in the healthcare field, that a person who is not a doctor, I don't care if it's the president, I don't care if it's the congressman, I don't care if it's your state senator, nobody has a right to tell a doctor what to do when they're taking care of their patient. And that, to me, is profoundly corrupt, trying to interfere with even doctors and nurses who are taking care of individuals to make that decision. So again, I think it's a decision between the woman and her significant other, if there's a person involved. But it's up to we, the women, to make the decision about our bodies. Men don't have to nobody stops a man when he wants to have a vasectomy. So, you know, women have a right to do what they feel is necessary in that particular position.
Chair Noem, I want to ask you about this. Former President Trump has talked about his position on abortion in some different ways this election campaign. At some points, he's criticized strict bans, while at other points, he seems to be supporting strict bans. What should voters make of where he stands on this issue?
Yeah, President Trump's admitted that he's evolved on this issue over time, as I think a lot of people have. It's a very complicated issue, and abortion is something that I hope no one ever has to wrestle with that decision. They should never have to wrestle with that. But if they do, we need to have policies in place to appropriately allow these formats and these discussions be had, and where is that had? And this court determined that the state is the best place to have these discussions. The state governments are the ones you're closest to. We don't always think about it because it's not on television and it's not as exciting and flashy, but your state capital is so much more accessible, and you can influence your state legislators so much easier than you can the national in Washington. And that's really where this should be, and so many other issues, they belong in our state capitals.
I want to take some, did you want to add something?
Yes, I want to, again, this is a presidential election, and the presidential election is not just who you're electing as the President of the United States, but you also are going to be electing your congressperson, your senators, your state representatives, and your local candidates that are running as well. You also are going to be electing Ohio Supreme Court justices as well as, and that's very, very important. So when you talk about it's up to the state, really, there has to be some national direction as well and support, which is what we had before. So again, when you're looking at who you're going to consider to vote for in the Congress, Senate, or state representatives, if their values and their views are one that does not support a woman's right to vote, then you vote them out. That's the way you do that.
And we want to take answers from a couple of students in our audience. Jen, who do we have with us here?
Hi, I'm Danny Lee, and I think protecting abortion nationally is very important because without that protection, women are left on their own to make these really hard decisions, and they're left to people who may not care about them or people who may not be supporting them directly. Like, if your government does not actively wish for you to be healthy and safe and alive, then I don't think that's a government that people should be endorsing.
Thank you. And we have another student.
Hi, I'm Eve. And I think it's really important for women to be able to choose what they're doing with their own bodies. And it's scary for a man who has no idea what it could be like going through an abortion or not having an abortion, like making decisions on that. So,
thank you very much. We appreciate your perspectives. Howard, could the issue of abortion make the difference as far as who wins this election? We have a lot of races on the ballot, as Chair McFarland just mentioned, but in terms of the presidential election, could that be a difference maker?
Yes, I think it could. And actually, I'd like to hear more from our students on this subject, but I will say this. There's a kind of voter sitting out there now listening to all this, who are fathers of young women, high school age, college age, doesn't matter. And I think they're becoming concerned about this idea of somebody wants to control some politicians want to control my daughter's life and take away a right that her mother had, her grandmother had, and it's, to me, those people, those male voters, are the ones who are the surprise group. They're going to show up, and they're not going to be very happy about this talk of politicians controlling the lives of their daughters.
We do have time to take two more student responses, if we have a couple more students. Jen, I want to ask you your thoughts on that. How big a difference do you think this issue could be? I think it's important to state that people who oppose abortion access, sometimes with exceptions, many of them feel like abortion is murder, and that is the basis for their opposition. So I think we should state that, then not everybody has the same opinion on this. But Jen, how big an issue could abortion be in this election?
So I think it could be a very big issue. And what we just heard is one side saying we should have a national standard and one side saying we need to keep it to the states. And that's a question for y'all to answer. We have certain fundamental rights that we decide. For example, can you imagine if you lived in a different state and you couldn't vote until you're 21 versus 18? We have a national standard that once you're 18, you can vote, right? So that's a question for y'all to think about. But we had kind of a national protection for abortion, fertility treatment, birth control that was removed by the U.S. Supreme Court. So your question when you're thinking about president is, again, does the which candidate most closely aligns with what I think? Do I think there should be a national standard, or do I think it should go state by state? And one more quick thing I want to remind you all. Ohioans did go to the ballot box to restore abortion access, but the tool we used was very, very, very expensive and very hard to pull off. It took thousands and thousands of volunteers. And just across the line, Kentucky can't even do that. The people of Kentucky can't even pick up their clipboards to put something on the ballot. So they would have to go to the state house. But one more thing, and I'm sorry, but gerrymandering. When politicians can draw their own lines, they don't have to listen to us. Both Kentucky and Ohio are very gerrymandered. And so one of the reasons why we saw this six-week heartbeat abortion ban come into effect in Ohio was because the legislature was so gerrymandered, they didn't have to be responsive to us. Nearly no one in Ohio thinks a six-week ban is appropriate, which we saw after millions and millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of volunteers worked to get the abortion amendment passed. And some states are both gerrymandered and have no ballot issue. So the question for you is, should it be at the state level, which you're hearing one side say, or should it be national?
Thank you. I do want to hear from some students. Oh, well, we'll see if we have time. Let's go with you first.
Hi, my name is Tyler. I'm an engineering student, so I want to offer a bit of an older perspective on this. As far as the importance of abortion to this current election, I feel as though it was really jarring to have something so once believed to be foundational, constitutional, ripped from us, to use kind of dramatic verbiage. I think it actually inspired quite a bit of adolescents to become more politically involved, because we grew up on a foundation thinking that like women had rights, undeniable rights to our bodies, we were protected by our states, and seeing that get taken from us, it's spurred a lot of people into action. So I think we definitely see it being the central focus of a younger voter turnout right now.
I'm Anna Dixon. Definitely going off what she just said, I think that it's ultimately an issue of fundamental human rights, in that at the core, it's that women should have the right to choose. Ultimately, it's not about what you believe politically or what you believe religiously. It's that you have the right to choose what you do with your body and what happens to you.
Okay, very quickly.
Hi, my name is Mashukurat. Abortion is important to me because there are so many women out there who got like pregnant because they threw rape and because they don't want that. And this may affect their health, their life, and their education. That's why I think abortion is important.
Thank you. I want to give Chair Noem and Chair McFarland just 30 seconds. I know that's really tough. Chair Noem, you first. Is there something you'd like to, a response you'd like to offer to all this?
Yeah, I think some additional context from the conservative perspective on the life versus choice debate is, you know, I completely understand. I've got three kids, and I was there with my wife when our daughter was born. So I haven't been through delivering a child personally, but I've been through that process. We are talking about a life here at some point, and there's a lot of debate of when life begins. Is it conception? Is it, you know, what's the appropriate time? Are we talking about being able to abort a child a week before delivery date? I think there's an appropriate conversation that needs to be had, and the question then comes to when is the appropriate time for that to be had?
And I do want to note that more than 99% of abortions occur before 21 weeks gestation. 93% of abortions in the U.S. occur in the first trimester of pregnancy. That's according to the CDC. It's less than 1% of abortions occur after 21 weeks gestation, which is typically viewed as viability for the fetus. Chair McFarland, did you want to add something?
My concern is, and it's very concerning to me, that the other side wants to intimidate women, They want to talk about, exaggerate what is not a fact but is false. First of all, nobody delivers and aborts a nine-month-old baby after that baby's been born. There's been, the media has really taken what's a fact and made it something, a lie, just to put the fear of God in women and also the fear of God and even in some of the men. But nobody, because I work in a hospital, no doctor is going to, there's not going to be a live birth, then that doctor's going to take that baby somewhere to be murdered. That is absolutely false. The whole thing is scare tactics to try to take away the rights of women to make decisions about their bodies. And we should not allow it. So if you have a person who feels that way and tells those lies because you see them on TV, you see the commercials, you don't vote for those individuals. You vote them out.
We do have another trivia question that we're going to throw out right before our next break. Go ahead, Howard.
Okay. Kamala Harris once turned down a job offer in which presidential administration?
Okay, put on your thinking caps. We will get those answers right after our break. And up next, immigration has become a lightning rod in this election. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're live from WCET with a student audience to discuss the presidential race. My guests are WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, League of Women Voters of Ohio executive director Jen Miller, Kenton County Republican Party Chair Shane Noem, and Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Gwen McFarlane. We're going to get to the candidates' messaging on immigration in just a moment, but first we asked this trivia question before the break.
Kamala Harris once turned down a job offer in which presidential administration?
Okay, Jen, do we have a volunteer to answer that question?
My name is Shemez, and was it the Obama administration?
Yes, it was.
All right. Good job.
Congratulations, you won one of our fabulous prizes. Good work.
Do you want to explain this one?
Do I want to explain? No, I do not. I do not
Obama
have.
Obama administration. He's...
Oh, go ahead, Howard. Okay. Would you like to explain it?
Yeah. Okay. Just real quickly, what that refers to is when Eric Holder was Attorney General and he decided to leave the administration, he recommended Kamala Harris as his successor. And she said, no, I don't think so at this point.
Okay. There we go. Thank you, Howard, for that context. I was just going to leave it out there.
Yeah.
We turn now to immigration, a major talking point in this election. Before we see some clips from the candidates, Chair Noem, what are you hearing from your constituents about this issue? From voters.
Yeah. In Kentucky and Kenton County, we're not a border state, but we're still feeling the impacts of a loose border. We need to secure the border. Kentuckians want to secure the border. Drugs are funneling into Kentucky through our border, through our ports of entry from China, from Mexico, and they're poisoning young people. You all probably know people that have used or abused drugs. Those are not homegrown. A lot of those are coming across our southern border. And that's a priority of Republicans and a priority of the previous Trump administration to seal the border, build a wall, whatever it takes, physical, digital, whatever kind of security we need to lock that down to make Americans safer.
Chair McFarlane, what are you hearing from voters when you talk to them? What are you hearing about immigration?
Well, basically, our country was founded on immigrants, and so I think it's over-exaggerated about illegal immigrants here. We have more legal immigrants in this country than illegal, as well. Many individuals who are here illegally are not coming across the border. Many of those are individuals that are already here and their visa or their passport has expired. So again, when you look at the facts, what the facts are, most individuals who are illegal are not those trying to come across the border. It's the ones that are already here who have expired visa or passports.
I want to ask the students in our audience a question about immigration. How important is immigration policy to you in this election? If you want to offer up an answer, signal our colleague, and we'll want to hear from a couple of you. Now we're going to hear from some of the candidates.
So my question for you is, what are your plans, or do you have plans to support that subgroup of immigrants who have been here their whole lives, or most of them, and have to live and die in the shadows?
I'm so sorry for you.
Thank you.
You must remember your mother as she lived.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough of a feeling about your strength that it probably comes from her to know. She would want you to remember her as she lived and not as she died, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's take it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents were here for years, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And your father was able to earn his pathway to citizenship, but your mother was not. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to assume it's because part of the problem is that we do have a broken immigration system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Howard, Vice President Harris says in that clip, our country has a broken immigration system. How long has the system been broken? Who should get the blame for it?
I don't know. I can't assign blame on this. So there's, you know, at least 40 years of people streaming across the border. Yes, I think both sides agree that we have to secure the border and not allow people come in who have evil intent. Selling drugs, fentanyl, and that sort of thing. The problem comes down to this idea of mass deportations, of taking millions of people somehow, rounding them up, and sending them, as Donald Trump says, back where they came from. Number one, it's impossible. Number two, it's cruel. And I think it's not this border security problem, but it's this idea of mass deportations that has most people just turns them off.
I should have mentioned that audio clip came from a Univision town hall. Do we have a student who'd like to comment about this?
Hi, my name is Maggie. I think that historically America has been such a melting pot, and that's where we stand, like, as a nation. And really, this whole issue with, like, people are bringing stuff across the border and whatnot, we should be providing better resources for these people rather than kicking them out and saying they're not welcome here when they're just looking for a better place.
My name is Jude Wesolowski, and it is an extremely important part. It's super important to me that immigration is covered in this election because my family is... We immigrated from Poland. So it's extremely important to me that, like, immigration is covered because it's an extremely important part of our country. We were founded, as it's been stated, on immigration. But it's also important that it's done, like, the right way and that we don't just have people who are, we don't know about, like, just coming in and out and, yeah.
Okay. Thank you both for your perspectives. We appreciate that. Now we have a clip from former President Trump in the ABC News debate.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country.
Chair Noem, those were statements, of course, by the former president in this debate. They became big news. Democrats accused the former president of spreading lies. What do you take away from what he said, and how have you been talking with voters about immigration?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said on this, and I think this episode highlighted the real challenges that local communities have because of immigration. I mean, there are real causes and effects. I don't have any thoughts on Springfield in particular, but you do have challenging dynamics when local government is here to administer, you know, water, sewer, basic services. And if you have an immediate influx of thousands of new residents over a period of a year, some of these small communities can't keep up with that. And we've got a current administration led by Vice President Harris. She was tapped as the border czar early on in the administration, and we've seen no action from her on this subject. So we have real reason to doubt we'd see any serious action over another 4 years.
Chair McFarland, I want to give you a chance to talk about that. And the latest numbers I've seen is that the Biden-Harris administration has been, you know, they've been taking a lot of heat. In September, U.S. Border Patrol agents recorded nearly 54,000 apprehensions of migrants. That's the smallest number since President Biden took office, but it still feels like a big number, I think, mm-hmm. to a lot of people. How have you been talking to voters about this issue? What are your thoughts on what Chair Noem just brought up?
First of all, there was an opportunity from a nonpartisan group of individuals in Congress, which means it was Democrats and Republicans together, who worked together to put a plan to help us get through this process. And as everyone knows, this has been a long-term problem. They had a problem, they had a plan, they had buy-in from almost everybody, and then Harris's opponent stopped that plan in some way, somehow coerced them not to go through that plan, so that rather than allowing them to fix the problem and move toward resolving that issue, they were halted because he wanted to keep it on the ballot as a ballot issue. So when you see that unfair gesture, and then when you see an individual as well who is running for the President of the United States, highlight Springfield, Ohio, which and the Haitian population that was there. By the way, they were all legal, as well as the mayor of Springfield, who was Republican, and also the citizens said that was a lie, it wasn't true. So again, when you have a person who continues to spill out lies and not the facts, that person is not qualified to run this country. So if you were, let's say you were an employer and you were interviewing me for a job, and I told you all kinds of lies about what you knew was true. I also have 34 felony counts against me. I also am not a supporter of women or women's rights or women's issues, and I'm a bully. Would you hire me? Thank you.
Chair Noem, I want to give you just a little time. I don't know if you want to respond to that or not.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Jen, one of the issues that's come up in this race is the assertion that people who are not citizens and who are in this country illegally are voting in numbers that could change the outcome of the election. What's the law? Are people who aren't citizens legally allowed to vote in the presidential election? What do the numbers show us about whether that's happening?
So fraud is exceedingly rare, okay? So, and most of the time when there is election fraud, it's not this question about citizenship. It's someone who, often it's a senior citizen, and they forgot that they voted absentee, and then they go to their polling location, right? We all have grandmas and grandpas that might do something like that. So I wanted to say a couple of things. One is I just want to remind everyone that it seems funny what was said in Springfield, but they've had bomb threats.
Oh yeah.
These children are being bullied. There's been traffic issues, and I do know Springfield very well. In the Haitian community there. So we do want to think about that. But non-citizen voting is what usually happens is folks will get flagged, and sometimes you'll get headlines that say that these people are getting removed from the rolls. Here's the problem, is the databases that they're using to look at the voter registration rolls are not accurate, okay? So first they use the BMV database where you get your driver's license or state ID, right? Well, you might only go there every 4 years, right? Then they might use something called the SAVE database, which is looks to see if you can qualify for certain benefits. And reminder that illegal immigrants cannot get benefits. But they'll look at that. And so the bottom line is there's citizenship ceremonies every day in Ohio. And so the data is just wrong.
This hour flew by. I want to thank our guests, WBXU Senior Political Analyst Howard Wilkinson, League of Women Voters of Ohio Executive Director Jen Miller, Kenton County Republican Party Chair Shane Noem, and Hamilton County Democratic Party Chair Gwen McFarland. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you to the students in our audience and teachers. We also want to thank WCET and our Cincinnati Public Radio colleagues who helped us out today. For more election information, check out the voter guide on our website at wvxu.org/election2024. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.